Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC, live in the green space today. And remember, listeners, when we're live in the green space, you can watch as well as listen as we stream live video from here. We're set up technically to do that, so you can go to our Twitter feed, you can go to the WNYC Facebook page, or you can go to the website, WNYC.org. All three have the live streaming video of the Brian Lehrer Show live in the green space today. I'm waving at you all right now. With us now, the president of New York City Transit, Andy Byford. New York City Transit is part of the MTA, the part that runs the New York City buses and subways, if the alphabet soup confuses you. Obviously, the governor's plan to avoid the L train shutdown for repairs is in the news, and we'll talk about that, but also other things. And the big picture fixes that Andy Byford was brought in to effect. So, President Byford, we always appreciate your willingness to engage. Welcome back to WNYC and welcome to the Green Space.
Great stuff. Thank you, Brian. Good to be here. Hey, everyone. How are you? Good to be here.
And listeners, our phones are open for Andy Byford at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Green Space audience, how many of you took the L train to get here today? Okay, well, we have a handful of L train riders. Let's talk about that first. You sure. have endorsed the governor's plan, but our website Gothamist reported you were at a community board meeting the other day saying you still have questions and you won't be steamrolled into an unsafe plan. So does the governor's plan have your full support?
I think anyone who is customer-led, which I am, would absolutely welcome a plan that avoids the disruption that we would have otherwise have to export onto customers of 225,000 users between Brooklyn and Manhattan every day. Absolutely, I'm delighted that there is a way of avoiding that. All I'm saying, and the governor and I are on exactly the same page, is that obviously we've got to get now the detail right. As I said the other day to other media, the baton effectively passes to me. The panel have come up with their recommendations. We like the look of the plan very much, and my chair has said overtly and publicly that the MTA accepts the recommendations. But as the operator, as the person you now hold responsible and accountable for delivering this plan safely, operationally, so that we get the practical detail right, and that we get the customer angle right in what is quite a different and more radical plan. I'm accountable for that, so it falls to me to get that detail right, and that's why I will take my time, have an independent scrutiny of it, but ultimately with a view to making it work.
The Gothamist report said you're convening your own engineering team, independent of the governor's or the MTA's, to focus especially on safety. True.
Correct. Brian, the audience for that matter, to really give you reassurance, this is partly because this is in my DNA. I've been a railwayman now for 30 years. I started on the Tube 30 years ago on the 30th of October 1989 as a station foreman back in the late 80s. But part of my career, I was a safety director, operations and safety director for one of the British Rail train operating divisions called Southeastern Trains. Having the word safety and director in your title is a sobering experience. My wife hated it, actually. But it teaches you two things. You must act upon something if you know that there's a problem. That's what I call guilty knowledge. And you must exercise what's called due diligence. So for that reason, I'm exercising due diligence. I'm just making sure that what looks fantastic on paper and is very well thought through, I think, that the panel was drawn from very expert people at Columbia and Cornell. And this has somewhat been lost in the reporting to date. They didn't work in isolation. They drew on both the existing plan we already had, and they drew on extensive paperwork and live input from our own MTA experts and consultants. I just want to do an independent check, and I don't think there's too many people out there who would not agree with that.
When were you first told that the 15-month shutdown that was supposed to begin in late April might not?
Well, the actual date, the schedule change, was just before the governor made the announcement with the panel. And the reason for that was, obviously, the schedule change came at the end of the review. But I was aware, right from the point at which the panel requested access to the tunnel, we facilitated that.
Was that just last month, December?
So the access to the tunnel, yes, that was December, something like December the 13th and 14th. So full cooperation from the MTA. And there's been a lot of commentary on the MTA recently, but 2 points I'd like to stress. One, immediately that was requested, of course, we facilitated that. And two, this plan, although different in its execution, still retains most of the features of the original plan. We're still going to replace the track. We're still going to provide accessibility at the stations, the three stations that we said we would. We're still going to upgrade the core elements of the tunnel. It's the methodology that's different. And what I said when I came into this job, and the governor brought me in to do it, let's not forget. I said I would do embrace two philosophies. One, be customer-led, and two, be open to new ideas. And those two philosophies in action.
Earlier this week, we had as a guest Columbia University Engineering Dean Mary Boyce, mm-hmm. a lead brain behind the new plan. And she explained in simple layman's terms for those of us who could never get into engineering school in this 30-second version how they will work around the damaged walls that house the tunnel's cables.
What we are proposing and what we have recommended is that the cables be actually racked on the wall of the tunnel, up high on the wall of the tunnel. This racking actually places the cables on the wall, not within a bench wall. So we do not need to use the bench wall for housing the cables, but instead we rack them on the wall.
So it sounds so simple in a way. You know, hang the cables on a rack rather than house them inside the walls. That way they don't need to rebuild the walls, which was the reason for the shutdown. If it's that basic, why didn't someone think of it before?
Okay. So, and that question has been posed a lot in the last couple of weeks. So the MTA did look at racking a couple of years ago. I've seen the evidence of it. Part of my further, use that expression again, due diligence has been to look back at what was previously proposed. Also, when I first got here, and I'm almost at my anniversary, Brian, January the 16th, I will have been here 1 year. One of the first things I did when I arrived here in this city was to say to my own team, I'd like to take a fresh look at the L line closure. This was probably back in February, maybe March of last year, because I couldn't really understand why did it take 15 months, maybe slightly less, 15 months when the contractor had full possession of that tunnel. That's, you know, I appreciate there's a lot to do, but that's still a long period of time. But what was explained to me was the difficulty of breaking out that entire bench wall, doing so very carefully, clearing up the debris, putting in a new wall. And the second thing that was explained to me was that all of these scenario, this scenario and others had been put to the community. And the community at the time, predated me, said, right, just get on with it. Rip the Band-Aid off and get on with it. So that persuaded me. So I turned my attention not to that, not asking any more questions on that, but to focusing with Polly Trottenberg, my commissioner of or the commissioner for DOT, to focus on the alternate service plan. So in looking back at this, yes, we did look at racking. We use racking. The MTA does use racking on the west end of the 7 line on the extension through to Hudson Yards. But the reason it was rejected for the L-line tunnel was there were a number of reasons. Number one, this was a retrofit of an existing sub-river tunnel, which is more inherently more difficult than when you're building from scratch. Number two, there was concern about effectively mounting the brackets on what is a 100-year-old tunnel. There was some concern about that and the impact of drilling into that structure. Number three, there was still the prevailing view that bench wall was in such bad condition, the best thing to do was take it out and replace it. The breakthrough with this new plan, which I am saying I embrace, but I just want to check the details, is that a number of things have come together. One, that you can leave the bench wall by and large in situ as long as you secure it with what's called FRP, which is fiber reinforced polymer. Number two, that there is a way to affix the racking to the wall without impugning the viability or the structural integrity of the tunnel. So those things coming together, that's what the fresh thinking has delivered. But again, for your peace of mind, I'm still going to check all of those things.
And with Andy Byford, president of New York City Transit, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and raise your hands here in the green space if you have a question for him. Let's go to Tanya on line 5 in Brooklyn. Tanya, you're on WNYC with Andy Byford. Hello.
Hi, yes. I just want to thank you for having me on the show. And I also want to say it's just so refreshing that this gentleman that's working for the MTA cares more about our safety. I am so sick of everybody trying to do things fast and not caring about the repercussions that fastness does. I just want to say thank you, and I appreciate you caring more about our safety than getting this project done fast.
Tanya, well, thank you for that kind feedback. At the end of the day, my job, ultimately, job number one is to keep riders safe. Absolute job number one. And in parallel, though, to make things better for you. So certainly in my year here, we've been very much focused on getting the base reliability of the service sorted out, both the subways and the buses and Accessor Ride. So we're pushing ahead on all fronts, but always with the underlying principle of your safety. That is job number one, and for me, always will be.
One more follow-up on safety from what you said before. The tunnel is very old, so are we sure the walls are going to be able to support the racking system?
Well, that will be one of the things that I will have my independent assessors check. But what we do know from the work that's already been done, there's some confusion about the use of the word tunnel. The tunnel structure, which is basically a series of iron rings bolted together, on the outside, but then a concrete liner is effectively sprayed on the inside. That is in very, very good condition. You know, it's testament to the people that built it 100 years ago. Where there's been some discussion about structural integrity, that relates to the bench wall, which is it's fitted within the tunnel, but it is not an integral part of the tunnel. It's an attachment within the tunnel. But that said, I stand by the point I made earlier, which is I still want to be certain. And I'm not taking anyone's word for it. I'm going to have independent. And by independent, I mean people who are completely independent from this project, who have not had any dealings with this project to date, and for that matter, who are pretty much independent of the general body of consultants upon whom we normally draw in New York. I'm going to have them have a look at it because I still want to be certain on the method of affixation to the tunnel liner.
We have a question here in the green space. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. Big fan of your show. I had a question. So I saw recently in New Jersey they're trying to drive more citizen engagement with the meetings. They push them back to the evenings. They have representatives from the bus and the transit lines at the meetings. I was wondering if there's something similar in New York to drive more citizen engagement.
Well, there is actually. There already is. I mean, in my year here, I've lost count of how many town halls I've attended, community boards, all sorts of forums, things like this. I appreciate this isn't in the evening, but I've certainly made it a point, a mark of my tenure, to be accessible to you. Someone asked me the other day, "Who's your boss?" And my answer is not meant to be glib. It's the customer. The customer is my boss. Obviously, I have a named boss, but customers are my boss, so I don't hide. I tend to normally wear my name badge when I'm on the subway, maybe not late at night, but during the day, because I do believe in accountability. That's something else I get into trouble with my wife about, actually. She says, don't do that, and I promptly do it every day. I've always believed throughout my career in being accessible to people, being available to people. If you ask me a question, I will give you an answer. It may not be necessarily the one you expect, but I believe in speaking truth to power. I believe in holding myself accountable, and I expect my team to do the same.
Let's take another phone call on line 9, Rima in Manhattan. You're on WNYC with Andy Byford. Hello, Rima.
Yeah, I understand that there was a time before the decision not to close the L train when there were going to be hundreds of diesel buses that were going to replace mm-hmm. the train. So I'd like to understand what your commitment is to ridding the city of these dirty diesel buses and committing to renewable natural gas.
Sure. That's a great question, Rima. My commitment is absolute. My commitment is crystal clear. It's set out in the Fast Forward Plan, which, as you know, is the plan we put together within 100 days of my arrival, which is a comprehensive plan to modernize every aspect of our service and every aspect of transit in the city. So there is an overt commitment within Fast Forward to move to a fully green bus fleet, and we have the largest bus fleet in North America, a fully green bus fleet by 2034 at the latest. Now, that seems like a long time away, but I don't think it's particularly environmentally friendly to just bin a load of pretty much brand new buses, just to throw them in the garbage when they've got perfectly good working life left in them. That's point one. Point two is, before we go straight to, say, all electric buses, we must make sure the technology is proven. And there's a lot of misunderstandings about electric buses. There's not that many users of electric buses in the type of environment in which we operate, where you have to have very strong heating in the winter and very good aircon in the summer, which is itself a draw on the batteries. But we are progressing down that line. So we already do use CNG, compressed natural gas. We have hybrid buses. Those diesel buses we do have are actually what's called clean diesel. But we are committed to progressing with an order for 15 electric buses, which will be arriving imminently. And that will build to 60 electric buses over the next year. The breakthrough will actually be no one's really operating articulated buses, the long ones, because they're very difficult to charge. We think we've got a way of doing it, and we intend to get those buses in ASAP.
So these buses that were ordered to compensate for what was going to be the L train shutdown,
still coming.
200 buses, right?
Yep. So the bus orders have not changed. So it's back, if you like, Brian, to my earlier point that, I think a lot of people have assumed that the change in the way the plan will be executed changes the scope. With the exception of how we rack the cable and the obviated need now to remove the bench wall, everything else is still in play. So we're still going to have the buses. We're still going to do the elevators. We're still going to replace the track. We're still going to make the tunnel resilient. All of that remains in play.
But if the L train is going to run with normal service during the weekday daytimes, during the rush hours, are these 200 buses going to be running along that route in addition?
No, what we will do is where, for example, we were bringing in new buses to provide this mass operation across the Williamsburg Bridge, the bus bridge, where we were going to literally send a bus less than one a minute. It was 80 buses an hour. We don't need to do that now, but those buses are still going to come in, because what we will do is accelerate the retirement of older, less environmentally friendly buses. But again, I'm going to put a caveat on that, because don't forget that with this revised plan, we still need to have an alternate service of some description, because that we still need to get the work done. The need to replace and refurbish that tunnel has not gone away. We're just going to do it in a different fashion. So that means on nights and on weekends, we will still need to run an alternate shuttle of some sort. And that, incidentally, is also part of my due diligence review, not just from a safety perspective, where the theory is we'll run just a 20-minute headway on bidirectional working in the L-Line tunnel. I want to make sure that's sufficient. I also want to make sure that's customer friendly. So I'm not ruling out having a supplementary bus to complement the subway, or maybe even to replace it.
And just to be clear, are these buses environmentally friendly, as you just call them? Because you said earlier that you're only ordering 15 electric buses.
So let me just clarify that. 15 articulated buses as part of a wider order of standard buses, which are 40-foot buses, and they are electric. So progressively, we are moving to a green fleet. But my counsel to everyone is, you know, tempting though it is to say, let's just order electric from now on, you've got to make sure that the design matches the quite harsh operating regime we have here in New York. So you've got to make sure, for example, that your charging points and your charging technology, be that in the garage or on the street, works properly. You won't thank me if you just keep seeing electric buses broken down by the side of the road.
Let's take another call. Xenia on line 7 in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Andy Byford, head of New York City Transit. Hi, Xenia.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate all the effort being done for the MTA. And I understand it takes a lot of time to collect all the money and have the proper budget to update the subway system. But in the meantime, is it possible to do anything about the cleanliness of the subway stations mm-hmm. and the stairs and the elevators, while the trains itself themselves are really pretty clean? The stops are horrible. They are smelly, they are dirty. That's one question. And the second question, there used to be signs on the subway and also somewhere on the subway stops about the numbers that we could call to report that there are homeless people. These numbers are not available on a regular basis. They pop up maybe once in the winter time and then they disappear. Homeless people are always on the trains, which is very sad. And I know the city is trying to resolve that issue, but at least signs could be permanent there, as well as those signs that helped educate a little bit all of us on the train how to behave, to provide more space for fellow passengers. They were really very funny, humorous signs once upon a time.
Xenia, I'm going to jump in because our time is getting so short. Two, you know, very concerned citizen questions. Signs about regarding helping homeless people on the trains and the cleanliness of subway stations.
Yeah, sure. Both things I care passionately about. Number one, with the cleanliness of stations, you'll notice that already we have made a change to the way we manage our stations. Going to any transit station, now you should see a sign up, a permanent sign, which says who the group station manager is. This is about providing locally accountable named individuals with their picture. It's a job I used to do years ago. I was the group station manager for King's Cross in the Underground. And one of their mandates for me is to drive up the basic cleanliness of our stations, customer service at our stations, and all other aspects, including working with New York Police Department and the various agencies who look after the vulnerable people who've become homeless, to make sure that, you know, we do provide a decent, clean, safe space for our customers and a controlled environment, while also being sensitive to the needs of vulnerable people. But what's really needed is, yes, we've got to up our game on cleanliness. A lot of these stations, it's not just cleanliness, they need comprehensive refurbishment. That will also be delivered by Fast Forward.
We just have a few minutes left. Let me do kind of a lightning round, not yes or no questions, because I don't think you can answer these yes or no, but short answers. The very structure of the MTA is being called into question mm-hmm. these days. One way is that City Council Speaker Corey Johnson is looking for the city to take control of the bus and subways itself, removing them from the MTA, which is mostly state-controlled. The mayor came out against that idea yesterday. Do you have an opinion?
I'm a reformer, so I do believe that we should constantly look to make the MTA less bureaucratic. We should make it more efficient, more dynamic. I don't like bureaucracy. I'm on the same in league with the governor on that. He doesn't like bureaucracy, neither do I. In the many ways, ownership is one thing, as long as whoever owns the MTA, as long as they let me get on with what needs to be done, as long as they give me the funding for what needs to be done, you can then hold me accountable. Our plan will deliver state-of-the-art transit in an unprecedented time frame. So please unshackle me, release me from the various bureaucracies that hold us back, because we know what needs to be done. We just need the funding and the political support to do it.
So how much is this whole L train... How much is this whole L train surprise a distraction from your larger mission here, which you just referred to, which is your fast-forward plan to turn around the whole system.
Sure. I don't see it as a distraction. The L train needs to be got right. You know, at the end of the day, there's 225,000 people who ride the L train. 400,000 every day, but 225,000 of whom would be affected on the L train. We've got to get it right. That was always on my to-do list. This is an exciting new way of maybe making that less impactful. But I'm crystal clear on what my ultimate mission is: get the existing day-to-day service to work better. And already with our speed campaign, which is where we are taking out unnecessary speed restrictions, we're making sure that what are called signal grade timers, which are wrongly calibrated, we're correcting that. We're getting our dwell times right. And the subway performance, the data, don't take my word for it, the data shows that it is beginning to improve. We're working with PD and with the city to drive up bus performance, to get the buses through crowded streets more quickly. We've appointed an accessibility advisor to not just talk about accessibility, but to make it a reality. L-Line absolutely needs to be got right, but the fast forward, doing the basics, and delivering the plan are my key priorities here in this city.
And last time you were here, you made news by raising the issue of fare beating as a factor in the MTA's financial problems. Now the Manhattan DA and others, as you know, are trying not to criminalize as much behavior, including that. Some of the politicians pushed back after you were here. One critique I heard was that the biggest fare beating problem these days is not black and brown kids jumping subway turnstiles, but people on Staten Island not paying on the buses. Is that your understanding?
The only point I was making was that I don't think I'm doing my job properly if I ignore fare evasion, so I'm not going to. I did not give a commentary on who was doing it. I merely said that part of my job is to make sure that we do collect the revenue owing to us, but it is a sensitive subject. There's a lot to it, and we're making sure that we do this properly and sensitively. I had an excellent meeting with the DA, Cy Vance Jr., and we both agreed that criminalizing people is not the answer. No one's calling for that, but finding ways in which to offer people of lower income ways to be able to afford transit, such as the Fair Fares program, that is a progressive thing to do, while in parallel we still look after the needs of the wider users who do pay their fares.
My understanding is that bus drivers don't do fare enforcement for their own safety after some very ugly incidents with riders. Is that the
case
now?
There's been some appalling incidents. My understanding is that a few years ago, a bus operator was actually murdered when he, unfortunately got into an argument about protecting the fare. So what we say to our operators is, obviously try to get people their fare for two reasons. Don't go too far. Number one, because you should not put yourself at risk. How does that help the riders? Because ultimately, that's someone who's now in hospital, and I've got a duty of care to my employees. But number two, should we really hold up the whole route, or the whole route, and that whole bus, maybe of 59, 60 people who have paid the fare, in order to have a row with one person who's objecting? No, the better thing is not to be passive, to call it in. We do have Eagle teams. We do have New York Police Department. Let's let them deal with it. They're the experts.
Please thank the president of New York City Transit, Andy Biden.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's keep talking.